Hopcast.
Der Craft Beer Podcast.
Why do you change your business?
Because you cannot download beer.
Yo, dieses knackige Zitat stammt von Erwin van Mol von der Brauerei van Mol aus Eindhoven in den Niederlanden.
Und warum sagt der gute Erwin das, was er sagt, nämlich, dass man Bier nicht downloaden kann?
Weil er eigentlich ursprünglich aus einer Branche kommt, wo die illegalen Downloads ganz viel kaputt gemacht haben, nämlich aus der Musikbranche, und er hat sich dann Richtung Bierbranche orientiert.
Eiskalter Branchenwechsel. Du bist Musiker und aktiver Heimbrauer. Wie sieht's denn bei dir aus? Erzähl mal.
Dazu sage ich nichts. Ich sage eher Hallo zur Folge Nummer 29 von Hopcast, dem Craft Beer Podcast aus Hamburg. Wir sind wie immer Regine.
Und Stefan.
Ja, und begrüßen euch recht herzlich. Wir waren in Eindhoven.
Wir haben uns dieses kleine Städtchen im Süden der Niederlande angeschaut. Und ich muss sagen, ich kann einen Trip dahin total empfehlen. Was können wir über Eindhoven erzählen in aller Kürze?
In Eindhoven wurde die Firma Philips gegründet, damals als Glühlampenfirma. Und die hat auch eine ganze Zeit lang das Bild da sehr geprägt, weil sie so mehr oder weniger der Hauptarbeitgeber war. Die haben sich zurückgezogen und haben nur noch den Research und Development Bereich da. Es ist die Designhauptstadt in Niederlande. Es gibt ganz viele Studenten. Es gibt mittlerweile auch sehr prägend die Firma ASML, die, Achtung, ich muss mich konzentrieren, Lithografie-Systeme für Halbleiter herstellen.
Das hast du gut gemacht. Das haben wir tatsächlich geprobt hier vorher.
Und ansonsten, es ist so ein Startup-Spirit, den das Städtchen versprüht.
Absolut aufstrebend, sehr positiv. Man freut sich übrigens auch, wenn Menschen dorthin reisen und sie besuchen. Das kann man nicht von jeder Stadt sagen. Tatsächlich ist die touristisch noch nicht so überlaufen. Also das ist wirklich ein kleiner Geheimtipp noch, möchte man sagen.
Ja, absolut.
Das Eindhoven. Wir haben uns auch ein paar Bierbetriebe angeschaut.
Genau.
Wir waren in der Bottle Distillery und haben dort Mark besucht und sein Lucky Bastard probiert, was ein Bierbrand ist.
Genau, wir waren bei Rob, der wird auch kurz erwähnt von in dem Podcast gleich. Der hat die Brauerei 100 Watt, die Staatsbrewery Eindhoven. Und wir waren bei Erwin van Mol in seinem Braupub und haben mit ihm über seinen Braupub und über die Brauerei gesprochen.
Genau, und der gute Erwin ist natürlich ein Holländer, und insofern sind wir ins Englische gewechselt. Es wurde, wir haben es erwähnt, ein wenig Bier verkostet. Wenn es in irgendeiner Form irgendwo mal so hakt oder Worte fehlen, ihr kennt diese Phasen, in denen dieses Hirn diese Synapsen nicht zusammenspielen lassen möchte. Wir haben das, glaube ich, an ein, zwei Stellen hier verspürt. Wir möchten uns dafür entschuldigen, aber irgendwie, glaube ich, ist das auch nicht so schlimm.
Ich glaube, man kriegt auch so mit, worum es geht, genau. Wir haben wie immer Biere getrunken, und diesmal haben wir völlig überraschend zwei aus Eindhoven mitgebracht. Einmal das Euphorie, das ist ein IPA von der Brauerei 100 Watt oder 100 Watt. Und dann haben wir noch von Van Mol und der Handbryggeriet aus Norwegen, das Inspektor North, das ist ein Quaik Imperial IPA. Und genau, wir legen uns jetzt zurück, lassen das Interview laufen, trinken die Biere, und wir hören uns danach wieder.
Yo!
I'm Erwin van Mol, so I'm following the age-old tradition of naming your brewery after yourself, basically. Also because when I was still a home brewer, I already used that name, so I kept it, basically. And we're in our brew pub in Eindhoven.
And when did you start brewing craft beer?
I think around 2010 or something like
okay.
that, I think, yeah.
And you're a lone brewer?
Sorry?
A learned brewer? Or
I learned it myself.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Well, I did a little course in Belgium, but that's just a kind of homebrew course.
And what did you do before?
I produced my music.
You're a music producer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yep. So that's what I did for a long time before I started doing beer professionally.
Okay.
Yeah. And why do you change your business?
Because you cannot download beer.
So
So you decided you have to a new job.
It's a combination of fact that I've been doing it for so long that I also perhaps thought, okay, if I want to do something else, I should think about what to do. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's harder and harder to make a living with making music. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only way to make a living from music nowadays is, I think, to perform live. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And because that's where you can make music. But recording music, it got less and less, basically.
Absolutely.
So now I make beer instead of music.
Yeah. It was a real decision.
It was a real decision. Yeah, and something that took me a couple of years also, because I thought, okay, what shall I do then? I want to do something that I can put as much creativity and passion in as in music. So it's, I said, I'm not going to work in an office or something like that. And then already I was starting to do homebrewing, and basically at a certain point, 2012 or so, I think, some things clicked together, because then you started to see a little bit more of the kind of craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not in the Netherlands, but you saw it when I went to places where I played for music. For instance, in the UK, you saw that there was this kind of new breweries coming along and a little bit of new bars. The first BrewDog bar started popping up there. And I thought, okay, that might be interesting. That might be something that gets bigger. So then I thought, well, if I want to, I can't afford to do two or three more years of practicing in my kitchen. I just have to start doing it professionally and see where it goes. So that's what I did.
It's funny, but we just talked to Rob from 100 Watts, and he was a sound engineer before.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, so
there's a lot of people in beer that are either cooks or music producers, I find. Or at least music, musicians, bands.
People
who have a kind of history with music.
Interesting.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And when did you start this business here, at this place here? Where are we? In Eindhoven? Perhaps you can tell us.
You mean,
what's the part of Eindhoven we're here?
Yeah. This is the city center, basically. Okay. The edge of the city center, but still it's the city center. And that's where we started our brew pub, together with my business partner Jaap, who is more of a kind of a bar background, basically. Mm-hmm. Because was something I didn't know anything about at that point, so we did it together.
It's good to have a person who knows about bar business and gastronomy and
such thing.
Okay.
That's the kind of split that we decided up on, and of course it all
started mixing. You're a brewer and here. Make the bar.
Yeah,
things.
Basically. In the first year we said, I make the beer and he sells the beer. But like I said, I mean, it got mixed up along the way.
Okay.
So, that's where we are. And we basically also decided that we didn't really want to, that we wanted to be not in right in the middle of the city, but more kind of like a kind of, most bars in the Netherlands, and certainly in Eindhoven, but in the Netherlands as well, are situated around town squares and this kind of this street with only restaurants.
Yeah.
We wanted to have more kind of urban setting, so to immediately say we're not your average bar. So in the beginning, people thought, well, what are you going to start a bar in this street for? But I mean, it turned out pretty well, because immediately people came and they haven't stopped coming to the bar. So
you have your own beer festival.
Yep.
I saw.
Yep.
It's in 2 weeks.
Yep.
How much? It's the first time, or
it's the fifth time.
Fifth.
Yeah. So we do it 2 days now, Saturday and Sunday, 24th and 25th. We have 36 breweries, 16 from the Netherlands and 20 from all over Europe. Also, two
big business.
Two American breweries.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yep. We did a collaboration road trip a couple. 8 weeks ago, six to 8 weeks ago, driving around the UK, brewing beer with seven breweries that are coming to the festival as well. So that's really. There was another one of these things, because after a year we thought, okay, we can wait, and because we were still not. We were busy with all kinds of things, but we thought, okay, if we don't start a beer festival now, then perhaps well, we now can set a trend, basically. So that's when we just did it. That's a lot of the things, I think.
How many beer festivals are here?
In Eindhoven, a couple, but at that point there were only, well, you've had beer festivals all the time in the Netherlands, but usually these were very traditional beer festivals, mm-hmm, okay, with traditional beers. Mm. And you only had a couple of them which were more craft oriented.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Boreft festival from the Molen, which is I think internationally, mm-hmm, still the most well known. But at that point, there were more people starting festivals, so we thought, okay, let's do it and do it properly and make a statement.
Yep. It needs energy to make this a thing.
I always like doing new things, so basically, mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, when I would be doing 3 years in the same kind of thing, then I get very bored, I guess. So,
okay.
So that's why you, and there's enough creativity and things to still do in the music, okay, I was going to say, but in the beer business, so.
So there's a beer startup, and then you make a beer festival, and wow, that's.
Yeah.
So you have your own brewery, or
we do basically in the brew pub itself. We only do very small test batches,
mm-hmm,
and then we have our own fermenters and in a brewery just outside of Eindhoven,
mm-hmm,
where we do monthly specials.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do a lot of collaborations, which we like doing, and mm, we have a core range, six core range beers, which we brew at the Proefbrouwerij in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, well, we can do anything from 200 liters till 20,000 liters per batch.
Okay.
So,
okay.
So how much beer do you make a year? You know that all about?
I don't know exactly, but I would say this year we're aiming towards, I think, 1,500, 2,000 hectoliters, mm-hmm, or something like that.
Okay,
yeah,
in that range.
Yeah.
And you said it's not a traditional way your beers are. It's a new twist, or what means crafted in your eyes?
Yeah, that's always a very difficult thing. It's now turned into a kind of thing that people... I mean, the meaning of the word craft has got nothing to do with, I think, what the beer stands for. But it is the term that people now understand. So for better or worse, that's the name we're stuck with, I think, craft beer. But for me, it only means, and I think the main important, most important thing about craft beer is independent.
Okay.
That's the thing. It really sets it apart from other beer. It's an independent breweries, and whether they're really small or bigger, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not owned by big beer companies like Heineken or InBev. Or that's what makes them different from other breweries.
And what's the
style? It's got nothing to do with the kind of style or the quality, mm-hmm, or whatever. It's, yeah, just about being an independent company.
That's a big point, I think, too. And your beers... when I look at your beer tap here, you have guest beers, you have your own beers, and,
yeah,
and then what's your decision which beers you have here in your pub, and which is your own?
In general, message? I think if I'm talking about all the guest beers that we have, first of all, we always want to try something new, so we change a lot every month or so. We have new beers in the fridges, so there's always something new to try, so we want to offer something new to people, so something they don't know. And on the other hand, we really support breweries that we like, basically, so breweries that we've collaborated with, or that we just like because they make great beers, and they can be very experimental, but they can also be more traditional. For instance, like breweries like the Ranke in Belgium, or De La Seine,
mm-hmm,
we like these as well. Some German beers as well, but they're hard to get sometimes, I think, here, fresh German beers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about being the most extreme with beers, it's just about, well, some people that try something new, we like that. I mean, not per se that we have to have 50 grams per liter hops in a beer, if a beer brewery gets away with using, I don't know, mustard seed in a beer and it's a great beer, then that's interesting. That's I think at least.
Yeah.
So that's what we want to offer to the people as well.
How open are you?
Basically since we've done that since we opened, so. People are very open here, I think. Well,
they must be
also, because one the deliberate thing we did when we opened to us, we don't have any of the easy options that people know. We don't have the big brands of, well, if someone likes Belgian beers, mm-hmm. we have Belgian beers, but we won't have the ones that you see in supermarkets or that they, so they can't fall back on these, so they have to try something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one of the things. And if they like a triple, we have a couple of triples, but not the ones they know, so they try a new one.
They do it, really?
Yes, they must, because we don't have them.
And how do you tell them that they have to taste?
No, we don't tell them that we have to. We tell them, well, we don't have that one, but we have one that's just as good.
You have to educate them.
Yeah, well, not educate them, but we like people that are able to be open-minded, so we don't have the... There are a lot of people come here to taste really new, exciting things, but mm-hmm.
so
of course not everyone, and sometimes you have groups, and some people are more conservative in the group than others.
Yeah.
But, we just want to show them that there's more beers than they probably know from the supermarket, and that these are interesting as well, and they don't have to be extreme, because if we would say, we don't have your triple that you normally drink, but we have another one, we mm-hmm. want them to like them, so we don't have an extremely hoppy one that they probably think, I'll never try this again. We want them to seduce them with beers.
Okay, it's a door for them.
Yes, yeah.
What we are drinking here, you are finished. What was this beer?
I think that was the Bloody Harry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was an IPA that we made for a punk rock festival here in the Netherlands called Jera. And it's an IPA with blood orange pulp added to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think to 15% or 20% or something like that. Yeah. That was just a twist for this festival. Well, there's not a really interesting story behind it. Apart from that, it's basically the recipe of our core range IPA and Harry means in Dutch a noise, so basically it's like a wordplay of Bloody Mary, Bloody Harry. Mm-hmm. So Bloody Harry is what probably my parents think of that festival. So that's it was a funny name, and of course then you need a blood orange IPA.
Tell me about this one.
That's made for another festival for Dynamo, which is a metal festival.
Oh, you have a...
Yeah, but we just like collaborating. Not only that, but because we also make a beer for a jazz festival, for instance, and
music passion.
Everyone that works here has a music passion, and of course, obviously, I have a music passion. So we like doing things associated with music, and that was already, I think, 4 years ago or something like that. They asked us to make a kind of festival beer for them, so we wanted to do something that was easy drinkable but still not a lager or with a little twist to it. So we came up with a Weizen with American hops added to it, and the name Lange Haar Teig, which was basically we couldn't find the right name, and at a certain point we had this app group with the people from the festival, and I said, okay, well, we're stuck here, we have to find something. What defines the festival visitors, and he said, they're all long haired scum. It's a kind of funny way of saying that. So I said, well, maybe that's a nice name as well. It is a kind of thing that people say as a kind of curse to us metal fans, mm-hmm. but I mean they do take it up as a kind of name that they're proud of, we're long heads come, so that's a very in Dutch a very cool name. It's not an easy name to pronounce in English, I think.
Not really.
It's a strong banana taste. And so what's your favorite today?
I think my favorite beers at the moment are I think the best beer we made so far is now on bottle, and it's the Buffalo Trace barrel aged imperial stout.
Mm-hmm.
That I really like. We have a black IPA on can, which I really like as well. Mm-hmm. Well, these are some favorites, I think. Yeah. But I like all the beers on tap now.
You have many. How many taps you
24
have here?
24 taps. Okay. And it's always 12 of our own beers and 12 guest beers.
Okay.
And then we have another, I think 15 different beers of ours on can and bottle as well. In all kinds of styles. Some barrel-aged beers.
That's great.
We have a nice barrel-aged Saison as well, for instance. And Weizenwein, something I came up with.
Weizenwein?
Yeah. It's not a barley wine, but it's a Weizenwein.
Special.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
We haven't heard about this before.
No. Actually, it's basically the double recipe of this, but which makes it 11%. But it's very different because it's way more... Yeah, well, we're full, of course, mm-hmm. and also the hops are double, so it's quite fruity, dangerously drinkable.
Sounds cool. Dangerous.
Weizen wine.
Yeah, why not? You have a barley wine, so I made Weizen wine.
How many people can come here? How many places you have?
I don't know. In the weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I think if it's busy here, there's a 100 people or so, I think, inside. Yeah.
It's a quite big place.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, most of the time when we're open, all the seated places are taken. And in the weekend, of course, people stand around in between and gets more busy.
Is the development of the craft beer scene in the Netherlands as you expected it? Or did you hope for a different development?
I think that there is a bit of a problem at the moment in the Netherlands that I think the breweries... I'm happy with all the breweries and I'm happy with all the beer drinkers, but I'm just not happy with the business in between.
Okay.
I think they just are too... unprofessional and too much focused on imported beers at the moment. That really irritates me. People really want good craft beer. They want local craft beer, Dutch craft beer, and there just isn't too enough distribution at the moment. You have to do it yourself, or since a couple of times, a lot of these companies are now thinking that they should all import very expensive beers from God knows where, and. Mm-hmm. I don't buy them anymore. I just for the bar. I just.
Your decision is it's Germany or
no. It's just I think
local
good
craft beer.
Yeah, local beer, but also good beer for a fair price. And a lot of these imported beers are just way too expensive.
Fancy craft beers from US.
I think why would I buy a 20-liter keg of an IPA for €200 or so? I just don't do that. But that's what a lot of the companies are a little bit focusing on. They think that they missed the boat or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or it will probably be, I hope, a phase. But, I mean, there's enough interesting beer happening in the Netherlands now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not always easy to get it for us as a bar. There isn't one distributor that says, well, we are the expert and we can sell you basically
everything.
There's no network that works really.
No.
National.
You basically have a kind of traditional distribution companies that were around before the craft beer, and they started doing some craft beer, but like I said, they don't really focus on it now. Mm-hmm. And then you got a lot of small companies that have started the last four or five years, but they're mainly doing imported beers.
Oh, that's a pity.
Yeah, I think it's a pity,
Because Netherlands is a small country, perhaps you can do a distribution way.
It's difficult because I don't have the solution for it as well. I mean, to start a kind of distribution company is not very easy, of course.
You immediately
have to start with a lot of people working and trucks driving and to cover. Even the Netherlands is not big, but still, it's a lot of driving if you want to get your the beers that you distribute available widely.
Yeah.
Have you a personal network that works? We have that in Germany. A few breweries work together, and I drive to this festival, and I take your beer to this point because I'm on the road.
That would be great, I think. And there have been vague ideas to do something like that, but the problem, I think, is that most breweries are just too busy. They don't have time to set something up like that.
But it would make sense,
and it wouldn't be easy, you know, because everyone wants fresh beer as well. So it will take you quite a lot of time, I think, to do that properly.
we just talked to Rob from 100 Watts Brewery, and he said it's the number of breweries in the Netherlands is too high compared to the people who live there. There's something like the 740, 750 breweries.
I don't think we have 700, but I mean, no, I don't agree on that. It's just that, like I said, I mean, it's hard for you as a smaller brewery to get your beers to the people who drink your mm-hmm. beer. That's the problem, not the amount of breweries.
Okay.
And that's just not very easy. I mean, I think, and everyone has the same problem. So that's so the best thing you can do is be very strong locally, because that's something you can still do yourself or have more influence on. But other people or other places in the Netherlands that also want to have our beers, and I don't know, mm-hmm. let's say 300 breweries that are around to get these beers, that's just very difficult at the moment.
Do we find your beers in the supermarkets in Eindhoven?
Yeah, the core range beers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of them have all six, and some of them have a few of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But most supermarkets will have some of our beers, I think.
Okay. So the core range is 6 beers?
Yeah.
That's what?
That's the Langaartuig, the Hoppen Whites, and that's our Belgian Blonde beer, Toewijding. That's Triple Trouble, that's a Belgian Triple. That's Durak, our core range IPA.
Mm-hmm.
That's Wanderlust, our non-alcoholic IPA. Mm-hmm. And that's our Imperial Stout, Ons Blackie.
Okay. In Germany, non-alcoholic beer is a big thing.
We launched it, I think, in end of April, beginning of May.
Mm-hmm.
And we really put quite a lot of marketing in it, for us at least, because we thought, okay, we really need to get this going, basically, and instead of waiting for a year about seeing how it does. And it does really well now at the moment, I think, yeah. Mm.
So it's a big market here, too.
I think so, yeah. And there's not too many beers still in that craft beers, I mean, in that kind of style. I'm thinking now about doing a non-alcoholic sour ale.
Okay.
Like BrewDog?
Do they have a sour?
Yes, a raspberry, but it's a sour, it's a raspberry sour. Oh.
Well, you can wait for that thing to happen, of course.
0.0.
It is a kind of easy idea, of course, because, What else is going to work alcohol without alcohol? Probably sour beer with fruit. I mean, that's, you don't really, you miss the alcohol even less in that, I think, than in an IPA.
And a
non-alcoholic Imperial Stout, that's not going to be easy, I think.
So we can try it. Why not? I think the Netherlands is special because you are impressed from Belgium and Belgian beer styles, and there are modern styles like IPA. What's your way in this jungle of beer styles?
I think what defines our beers is that they always have just a little. They're always a little bit different. At least as we try to make them at least stand out. But they're not extreme beers. We don't want to make the heaviest beer.
You mentioned that, yes.
Yeah, so they're balanced, I hope, I think. So that's, I think that these two define our beers. Yeah. So if we do a triple, we're going to make sure that there's little spices in there that make it just a little different from the other triples, but it's still a triple.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like suddenly that it's a over-the-top beer that has a lot of hops in it that don't fit in the style, or I don't know, the 12% is not something for a triple for me. So it's in a way it's traditional, in a way it's modern or a bit different as well.
So you miss sometimes your old business?
Making music.
Making music. Now you make beers, but...
Sometimes I do, but I still have at home my studio, and I just haven't... I haven't found the right moment to work in it. So in the end, I cannot say that I really miss it, because I can just sit down there tonight if I want to and make music. But that moment is still not gone.
How many people work for Van Mol?
I think in the brewery, let's say 4.5 to 5. You know, if you see the full jobs, and at the bar maybe 10 to 12 people, I think.
It looks like a real family, like a big family. That's why I ask.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Still, you know, we don't brew every day, of course. So
okay.
Like I said, our core range beers, we just have them brewed for us.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, if we would have got our own production brewery, probably that would work even more people. I mean,
yeah.
Most people in the brewery are in sales, for instance, working. Because that's, I think, at the moment very important also to at least do things yourself. Do not be dependent on these companies that are not paying you attention to Dutch breweries or not to you or whatever. You have to,
yeah.
You just have to do it yourself. So that's always also a decision we made 1.5 years ago. We're going to have a couple of people doing full-time sales and they just work for us and do our sales. And whether it be delivered through another company, that doesn't matter, but at least we have the contact with the customers. And certainly at that point, I think there weren't too many breweries doing that. Yeah, I think we should even do that more. But it's a question about what we can afford, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The days too short.
No, I mean how many hours that there are and how much money there is to pay people to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we still, since we started, basically, we built everything up from without extra funding or whatever. We just do it from, if we have more money at the end of the month, we can do something extra.
It's a passion for beer, right?
Certainly, yeah.
And there's a risk, personally. But what I saw your beers and this layout,
mm-hmm.
this design. Tell us more about the pets, which are on your beers.
Well, when we started, we had core range. We had core range labels with the first letters of the beers on them, very graphically designed labels. And then, I think now 2 years ago or something like that, we wanted to redesign basically the labels. And we thought, okay, with the core range beers, we want to do some kind of basically some kind of illustration. And we wanted to drop the letter altogether, but our designer just sneaked it in, and the letters are still there, and it really works. But most people notice the illustrations, of course. So for all the core range beers, we thought of an animal that would represent the beer and have a kind of for ourselves a kind of funny story behind it. Whether people see that story or not, that doesn't really matter. So Durak, which is the IPA.
Mm-hmm.
Durak is a Dutch word, but originally it's a Russian word, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it means a kind of, in Dutch it would mean a kind of little rascal,
mm-hmm.
a child that's a bit naughty. So we came up with the raccoon, and basically, he goes to school, but sneakily he's also a graffiti artist. And with the long head scum one, we have a walrus, you see him over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, he used to be long head scum, but he's got an office jacket on, so now he works in an office. And but you still see he's got a tribal tattoo there on his right shoulder. So all the animals have a little story behind them. And if we have money at some point, we have to make a cartoon. I think we will.
Yes.
They have to start doing their own lives and adventures. And this is the latest one, the Wanderlust. That was the non-alcoholic IPA.
Okay.
Which is the kind of, the New Zealand kiwi bird with a backpack on that travels the world.
Marketing is a big point, or? In this craft beer business?
Everything is important to do it well. So, I mean, the graphics and the labels are important as well. And to have fun with them. Because all the core range beers have this kind of design, but mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know whether you've seen any of the other bottles that we do, because with the kind of specials we have the lettering is the same, but the graphics can be completely different on all the bottles and cans.
Mm-hmm.
So with different styles, different from sometimes we also have this designers doing labels for us or painters or whatever we ask to do in a label.
Friends of you, or
yeah, actually
good friends,
including
me,
because
I do friends, some creative friends.
some labels I made, but I mean, including myself, I think four people that work here have designed the labels for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you yourself do labels too?
Yeah. Yeah. If we can't afford a proper designer,
then it's your job.
I do the design.
Are there any connections to brewers in Germany?
Connections. Well, we know the guys from Budelship.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been here a couple of times, and we've
Simon.
Been yeah, mm-hmm. we've been there. I was there. They were at our festival now last year. They did a taptic over here.
Mm-hmm.
This year we have Frau Gruber
mm-hmm.
over for our festival. That's the these are the breweries that we have some connection with, I think,
mm-hmm.
personally. I'm a big fan of Schönramer.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to get them to our festival for a couple of times, but it's impossible. And Schneider, we know the people from Schneider, so they've been here a couple of times as well, and we really like their beers. We always have some of their beers.
Mm-hmm.
We always have the sour one, the Cuvée Barrique. I think that's one of the few beers that we've had since we opened. We always have it.
I'm a big fan of the Hopfenweizer.
Yep, we have that. We have that one as well. We have the Hopfenweizer, and basically for all the major styles, we have one beer that we
uh-huh.
always have as a kind of that the people that like Weizen, we always have a Weizen, and that's mm-hmm. always the Schneider. Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. And we have one triple that we always have, and we have one Saison that we always mm-hmm. have, and we have one official Trappist beer that we always have,
mm-hmm.
and of course not the most well known ones, but we always have, and so the
little Schneider, edgy,
what?
A little edgy,
yeah. Schneider is it's not one of the most well known Weizens here in the Netherlands, but so that's the German connections I think we have. Yeah. And a couple of weeks ago, we were at Berlin Beer Week also for doing some events.
How was it?
It was really nice, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. We were at that festival, that festival of festivals at the end with the swimming at the swimming pool in Berlin. That was really nice.
The weather was fine.
Yeah, the weather was really fine. Well, at that point in Eindhoven,
Berlin
it was 40
is
degrees.
So hot and sunny.
Oh, really?
It was 10 degrees lower. Only 30 degrees in Berlin, so that was perfect. 40 degrees was too hot, I think.
A swimming pool full of brewers.
not only brewers. I hope. It was also no. It was. There were visitors as well. I think, of course, at the festival.
Yeah.
But it was nice.
How international is your brand working, Van Mool? You're in Germany, or are you at other festivals,
not
international?
Not, we do some festivals, and there's some export, but it's very difficult. And I think it's more important for us now to focus more on improving our market in the Netherlands than
mm-hmm.
putting a lot of time, effort, and money in exporting.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah, but we do. Of course, when we are asked for festivals, then we do them. We do a number of international festivals, and what comes.
Berlin, you said.
Yeah, we in Lyon. We did a couple of the things. We went to a Hahnbrekerit festival in April, I think, in early May.
Next year.
No, that was last year. It was this year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we do in Belgium in November? Billy's Beer Festival. We are there.
It needs manpower to do this.
Yeah,
by
yeah,
the way, yes.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, it's just it takes so much effort and so many hours and so much time, and it's just like I said, it's more worthwhile for us now to get our brand more well known in the Netherlands than everyone is selling beer at the moment,
yes.
And exporting and importing beer, and in the end, I also don't think it's. It's more interesting to sell it locally. I mean, why would you? In the end, I don't really believe why you should export an IPA. It's just every country nowadays has IPAs, so it's no point.
Your decision was, my first job doesn't work any longer, and beer is the future. And now, you say it, everyone is selling beer at the moment.
Yeah.
I guess you can download it.
Yes, you can download it.
You can download it.
That's the difference. Was the decision the right one?
Yeah, certainly. One of the guys, so I spoke with all the guys from the UK collaboration tour, but one of the guys, the owner from Wylam in Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the music business as well, so we had an evening of drinking beer and chatting about the music, etc. And I always say, and I still believe that's true, is that you know, for me, the whole beer scene now is pretty similar to the kind of 90s electronic house scene, techno scene that I originally came from, in a way that people go to each other's festivals, they collaborate, it was all the same as like there, but like what I said to David, the owner of Wylam, I said, but you only have so many years and then the Swedish house mafia turns up. and you know, but that is true, and that's going to happen in the beer scene as well. The Swedish house mafia will turn up. Who are just cheaper in their sounds and in their attitude, and it is already maybe a little bit happening, but of course it will get more commercial and it will get taken over. So we have to enjoy it while it lasts and get a solid position with your brand, because it is already happening. There are already brewers now that see it as kind of more as a business opportunity than as a passion. That was 5 years ago, that didn't exist.
Yeah.
But that, of course, then maybe for the consumer it matters, for the consumer it doesn't matter, I don't know, but it is happening and it will happen, of course. But that's it's getting more mature, the business as well, you can say. But it's not always we're all good friends anymore, of course.
Okay.
But I think it's the right decision that you're doing to keep it locally and sell it in the Netherlands or locally. That's what everybody is saying. So if you got a craft brewery, get your local following.
Yeah, that's the most important thing.
Get the people to drink it fresh in the city where it's produced,
yeah.
And don't try to sell it anywhere else. So that's your chance.
Not all breweries see it that way, and I can imagine if you really want to be commercially quickly successful that, and you have a lot of money, that you maybe see export as a very important part.
Mm.
Some of the breweries from the collaboration trip that I was on, for instance Northern Monk, they export a lot.
With great beer.
Yeah, but they grown so quickly in a couple of years, they are outgrown a lot of the other breweries, so you have to have a kind of really strong, in my opinion, business drive as well to do that. I couldn't do that. For me, it would be also too much about the product and not about the business, I think. But
yeah.
It's that good, right? But then you see, for instance, another brewery that we know for a couple of years now, Wipe and True from Bristol, and they stopped exporting almost completely, and they just sell a lot of beer in Bristol. And that's fine as well. I mean, they can be very successful in that. Maybe they can't sell the brewery to Heineken in 5 years. Well, I see maybe Northern Monk going that same way as Beaverdown has. But you can still have a successful business and be happy about it.
Yeah.
Is Eindhoven big enough to be a successful at local place here?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
There are some breweries here in town, but
there's enough room for everyone. Really? I don't see that as a competition or problem or whatever. No.
Okay.
You know, the brewers that are here now, we all like each other. But hey, there can also be a Swedish house mafia in Eindhoven. You know? I mean, it can happen. I mean, it's very simple. I mean, I know the brewers that are around now. They really are. Well, their product is what they're proud of.
Mm.
But who knows? I mean, next month some businessman can decide to throw a couple of million dollars in investment for a brewery and start really doing a lot of marketing and pushing things. And then, well, in some way or another, we have to we have to compete then with them. In the end, I don't think, apart from some big exceptions, you don't become a millionaire by brewing beer. So that's it. And people who are in it for the money, I think they find out quickly enough that you're not getting rich. That it's just, in general, it's hard work for an honest salary. And there's only a couple of exceptions, I think, where that have proven differently. But I mean, if you're in the Netherlands and you want to make quick money, I wouldn't start a brewery.
But what's your motivation to do it? What's your idea of being a craft brewer?
Basically, to do what I like doing. I mean, I did with music. I just like the product of beer and being involved in coming up with new recipes or improving recipes and doing events, doing design, doing a festival. It's just all of that is very nice.
Which kinds of
and
events
it's a nice product to make, of course.
Here?
It's not the same as making underwear.
Composing a beer. And composing a
song. Yeah. Well, in the end, I always say that making beer is not very different from making music. I mean, you start with an idea, but then you always have to produce it and master it and fine-tune it. And that's the same with beer as well. I mean, it starts with a kind of creative idea, but to make it a good beer, you can't just say, well, I have got this idea. You have to do a lot of technical things and process things, and which you do have to do with music as well.
Do you remember fail?
Yeah, of course.
In producing a beer,
yeah, certainly. But a couple of times you've had infections, of course. Well, that's something that you just you have to throw away. That's very simple. Well, that's been a long time since that happens, but of course that happens sometimes. And then, of course, you've got these ideas that are not turning out as you planned them. And the nice thing, of course, is that it still can be a nice beer,
mm-hmm.
because I know what I wanted to do. But you don't know that.
okay.
Well, you have to be honest about what it is. I mean, if you're making a strawberry sour ale and you don't taste strawberry, you failed. So it can still be a very nice sour ale, but if you call it a strawberry sour ale, you failed.
Mm.
So you can just cut out the word strawberry, and it's still a nice beer. These things can happen, but sometimes with barrel aging, etc., the result is not exactly what you want to. But I mean, sometimes with improvising, you can make still an amazing beer out of it. And some of these beers can turn out to can be the best beers that you've made because you thought, okay, this is we put a for instance at one point we put a black IPA in wine barrels, yeah, and that was just too much. It was just way too much. It was too overpowering the taste. But of course, I thought, okay, I put all this effort into it. It has to become a great beer. So I basically I blended it with a fresh batch of the beer, and then added all kinds of forest fruit, cranberries, and blackberries, and all kinds of berries to it. And in the end, it was a great beer. It just turned out to be a different beer from what I wanted to make at the beginning.
Are you an emotional brewer?
Yeah, I'm not a. There's a technical brewers there where people that can do that way better than I can, or I can. I mean, it's not my passion. But I know it's important. So if I brew myself, I know that's really important to keep track of everything. And of course, yeah. Well.
So you have a plan. You brew a beer, or how do you do it?
That really depends on the kind of beer. Some beers some beers start with the name. You just have a good name for a beer, and you think, okay, what kind of beer could this be?
Nice.
It's a cool name. So
it's like writing.
Yeah. So I have this name for a beer. So this name would be, people would want to buy that beer because it's a cool name. So what kind of beer is it?
Yes.
Like the Bloody Harry, for instance, that Jera beer, that name was there before the beer. But of course, and that's a simple link. Of course, you say Bloody Harry, okay, blood orange. So that, and you combine that with an IPA. That's an easy one. Sometimes it starts with a crazy ingredient that you think, well, I want to do something with this crazy with licorice. I don't know, something like that. So what kind of beer could you make with licorice? You start thinking.
Did you have the experience in music? You sometimes play together with someone, and you find out you can't play together. And that you have a brewing collaboration and you find out it's not really working?
Yeah, I think not very extreme, but in
but you're too different in what you want and how to get there or something like that.
But in the end, for me, collaboration with brewing is well, some I never or almost never do it with people that I don't know.
Okay.
It starts with drinking a beer here at the bar and with a brewery that visits for a festival or whatever, and you think, okay, let's think of a beer. And if you are very apart, then you don't collaborate, basically.
Yeah.
But of course, some of these breweries, for instance, in the UK tour, I really wanted to have seven breweries, because the song Link Again, I wanted to call it the Magnificent Seven, so I wanted to have... So there were a couple of breweries that I didn't know. Four I knew, and I knew the people from, etc. And three I didn't know at all, basically. So I met one guy once, and most of the times these things pan out really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can happen that you don't have a click or you find out that the guy brewing was not the guy that decided to do the collab, for instance. There is a very simple rule. Then, in my there's no point in arguing or anything. Then it's just if I'm visiting a brewery, then in the end I think it's their beer. So if I can contribute to that, then it's fine. And if we can really do it together, that's fine. But if there is a really, for instance, I like Sriracha Ace Hop. That's a very that's a hop I like. So really, I tried getting into collabs in the UK, but they did, and most brewers there didn't like it. So so we didn't use it. But in the end, the most important thing is that it's a good beer.
Mm-hmm.
But the best collaborations, you. Well, I think in general, you come either you are really ebbing to each other from crazy ideas and some ID clicks, or you already have the idea here at the bar. We got a lot of the collaboration started here at the bar, where you just start talking and you find you have the idea in your head already at the end of the night, because you just
there's
have this
a vibe.
Probably not good either if all the beers you make together, it doesn't have to be something with a strange ingredient. I mean, you can also just, which I liked. I like going out of comfort zones. So if both our breweries like hop, and we like hop as well, then if we don't have a good idea, I always suggest, well, let's do something that's not about hop then. Just to try and come up with something that perhaps we wouldn't normally do.
Mm-hmm.
What you do notice also in the UK a bit is that, of course, the market the last year and a half has changed, I think, and to me not in a good way. I've talked to all these breweries about it as well. I offered them my opinion. I mean, I think there's now way too much pressure on getting new juicy IPAs out there. And all these breweries have sales people, and they, of course, if you would say, well, we are doing a brown ale, they would just think, oh, you already see them sighing about the fact, no, we need another IPA. We need, but in the end, I think that at this point in time, at least in the craft world over here, and it pushes away a little bit of the diversity of beer, in my opinion.
But we could do a hazy brown ale dry hopped.
Double dry
hopped.
It's either double dry hopped or fruit or sour or a combination of two or three of these things together. And I like these beers, but I mean, hey, that's not the only thing there is.
I think one of the problems a lot of brewers are complaining about is these guys who only drink a beer once, so... You always have to have new stuff. They're going to a craft beer store and only buying the new stuff. And in a bar, they're only drinking the new
beer
stuff.
The beer nerds.
That only drink beer once.
Yeah.
And so you always have to come up with new stuff.
If you brew beer for these people.
That's
a decision.
Absolutely.
I mean, we think more than 50% of what we sell is our core range beers.
Mm-hmm.
So what you? But if you release six beers a month,
You're
already saying I'm a brewery that makes beers for these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of these breweries also, in the end, would want to have a stronger core range.
because
you, how long can you continue doing that? I mean,
absolutely.
And you're strong in social media with such a strategy. Okay, you have these people are very active in social media and so.
But I still think, you know, that's not a big part of the beer drinkers. There's only a couple of percent. I mean, there's a lot of craft beer drinkers that really don't care that much for drinking a new beer every time. Mm-hmm. It's just maybe the most vocal part, because these are the people that share their pictures and have Instagrams,
yeah,
etc.
Yes.
But I mean, it's not like they represent all the craft beer drinkers. I just like drinking beer with people, you know, with friends, and of course I like trying new beers, man. I mean, it's not that, that's not the goal.
Yeah.
But I know these people. I know these people. They even would drink, three new crappy Eastern European lagers because they haven't had them, instead of drinking their favorite beer again. I don't see the point in that.
What about can and bottle?
Yeah, I think it's all. Well, there's two big advantages of cans. That's the only advantages, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that is cheaper for transportation and storage.
But transportation is not your point.
Of course, it is. I mean, we have a warehouse with beer, and we transport beer.
Okay.
I mean, it saves you about 40-45% on weight, I think, and on space. So it's way more efficient.
Even for a local brewery.
Yeah, well, I mean, for a pallet full of cans is with the same amount of liters of beer on it, it's just way smaller. I think that's the main advantage. I don't believe in the other advantages that are being promoted, because for the beer, I don't know, it's not better for the beer. It's not storable. I mean, after a year, basically, no can producer guarantees the quality after a year.
Mm-hmm.
So any kind of imperial stouts or whatever that you put in cans, so there's no point in it at all, because it will store better in bottles than in cans.
Mm-hmm.
And the oxygen thing, well, I think there are rarely craft beer brewers that have lower oxygen in cans than in bottles. That's a story I like to promote, but most canning lines are just not capable of filling cans with low oxygen.
Okay.
Most of the IPAs I tried in cans are completely oxidized after 3 months.
Okay.
And not in bottles.
But well,
it's a bit of a kind of crazy thing that everyone seems to think now that it's better. It's better for me, for a warehouse, but it's not better for the beer.
But funnily enough, everybody's saying the can was a very important aspect for the NIPA craze. So
yeah, because it made it a kind of, and it's also of course on these 44 cans, so mm-hmm. bigger cans,
yeah.
And they all have the same design.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly it is a kind of little new genre, and
right.
it looks different in every aspect. So it's easy to say, okay, this is it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that makes it, that I think that created the craze also.
Mm.
And there's another thing about cans, of course, is that I think that's going to change. You know, I'm not really well known in the rules, but I think it's going to change that there's going to be new rules for cans because these cans are very hard to recycle.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the sleeves that are around it, and there's this layer inside it as well.
Mm-hmm.
That you cannot really separate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really something that's easy to recycle. Glass is way more easy to recycle. I think in most other countries it is seen as something that's recyclable and easily recyclable. That's not the case.
Yeah.
And I think there's more and more pressure to change the rules also in the European Union. So, and that would mean the end of cans, perhaps. European-wide, if you basically have to ask money for them to be like in Germany, basically,
yeah.
I think then the fun will be over for most people.
Yeah, absolutely.
The fun of design.
It's nice, of course, yeah. But I don't know. I don't know where it's going. Well, I know where it's going in one way, because what you see, of course, is that since these New England IPA brewers basically started doing cans and doing their designs and the whole... Well, the whole look of these beers. Other craft brewers, they have to follow.
Mm.
Breweries in the UK like Buxton and Siren, they have to change to cans as well because the distributors say, well, you don't have cans, so we don't want these beers anymore. Or if they don't say that, then the consumer says it basically.
Yeah.
So they are changing now to cans as well, and of course none of these breweries keeps their bottling line. So in the end, they all sold their bottling lines and they only have canning lines. So so it won't change easily back. Or the rules have to change and it will be way more expensive suddenly. In the end, I don't think, for instance, that the Belgian breweries will change to cans. But they make different beers, so people understand that a triple is in a can, but they don't want a New England IPA in a can, at least not at the moment. But hey, it's a trend. So it can easily change again, and next year maybe the trend is over and it's back to bottles again or different beers. Maybe then these New England IPA breweries start doing triples in cans.
we always have a final question, which is if you're lost on a lonely island, you can choose one beer.
That's an easy question for me.
Is it really?
Oh. Yes.
Oh, that's...
I like all kinds of beers, but if I would be on a desert island and I could only bring one beer, then it would have to be a Geuze.
Okay.
The German of the Belgian sour.
Okay.
Beers,
yeah.
What?
Your all-time favorite beer?
Maybe in a way, but certainly it would be my desert island beer because it's a kind of beer that you can always drink and it's always interesting, and even if it's not cold, it's very nice. If it's 25 degrees, it's still refreshing.
That's a flexible
for instance.
One.
So I won't get bored with it easily, I think.
Okay.
I mean, if you any hoppy beer you like, but after 2 days you probably think.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Da war sie wieder. Deine Lachen, der hat man dich jüngst an einem Tresen erkannt.
Ja, so ist passiert. Was soll ich sagen? Sie ist mir von meinen Eltern mitgegeben worden.
Ah, ich glaube, sowas entwickelt sich auch mit so einer eigenen Note. Egal, das soll jetzt nicht unser Thema sein. Unser Thema war dieses, oder ist dieses Gespräch nicht wahr? Ist, wir sind ja noch mittendrin. Ich finde das sehr beeindruckend, wie er das gute Stück hochgezogen hat. Also seine Brauerei mit dem Brewpub gleich, sein eigenes Bierfestival, das soll total schön sein. Es hat im August stattgefunden. Wir haben es ja zielgerecht hinbekommen bei dieser Tour, dass wir immer den Ort verlassen haben, wenn dort ein Festival oder ähnliches stattfand.
Ja, das haben wir total super geplant. Also wir können auch allen Leuten nur raten, die irgendwie nach Belgien fahren oder so, vielleicht auch vorher mal ein bisschen zu gucken, was man da so machen kann. Und auch wenn man, sagen wir mal, in Westfleteren Bier kaufen möchte, das muss man ja vorher im Internet schon sozusagen bestellen und bezahlen, dann kann man es abholen. Das kann man organisieren. Kann man auch sein lassen, so wie wir, aber dann kriegt man keins.
Ja, wir sind da eben sehr naiv blauäugig losgefahren, was ja auch irgendwie sehr schön ist. Wir haben halt festgestellt, es ist sehr viel los im Sommer, sowohl in den Niederlanden als auch in Belgien. Da sind viele Bierfestivals, da gibt es viel zu erleben. Ja gut, und man erlebt aber auch so ohne Festival was.
Ja, 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 auf jeden Fall. Also es ist ja nicht so, dass da nichts los wäre. Aber man kann das natürlich auch anders planen. Irgendwie.
Genau. Also der Van Mol hat seines gefeiert am 24. und 25. August. Da waren wir nicht da, aber wir waren vorher da. Was wir auch festgestellt haben, montags ist ein echter Totentanztag. Trotzdem hat er sich die Zeit genommen, für unser Gespräch extra die Bar zu öffnen. Deshalb ist es auch so schön leise.
Genau, das ist vielleicht auch noch so ein Ding, was man dann so feststellt, was wir auch in Belgien festgestellt haben. Montag ist kein guter Tag. Dienstag eigentlich auch nicht. Das sind so die zwei toten Tage. Wenn man eine Belgien-Reise macht, vielleicht kann man es so organisieren, dass man Montag und Dienstag
nicht da ist. Ja. Interessantes Konzept.
Genau, das ist auf jeden Fall ganz gut dabei. Und so als Norddeutsche hat er natürlich so ein katholischer Feiertag wie Maria Himmelfahrt, wo wir dann auf einmal, wieso haben die denn alle zu? Irgendwie natürlich auch so kalt erwischt. Ach, sind die katholisch hier in Belgien? Das ist ja ein Ding.
Es ist fürchterlich. So, naja. Ich mag es nicht, wenn Türen für mich geschlossen sind.
Ja, also man kann das alles besser planen. Und in Antwerpen zum Beispiel gab es nach 21 Uhr nichts mehr zu essen. In dem Viertel, wo wir waren, mehr oder weniger. Auch überraschend, muss man auch wissen.
Ja, aber kommen wir zurück nach Eindhoven zu diesem Gespräch. Ich fand es sehr spannend, dass er sagt, es ist eigentlich genug da auch im lokalen Markt, um zu überleben. Trotzdem ist er ja sehr international vernetzt.
Ja, teilweise noch eben so aus seiner Zeit als DJ und Musikproduzent ist er natürlich auch viel in England unterwegs. Ohnehin eine interessante Sache, die man merkt, dass so von der Orientierung her ist es sowohl im Musikbereich als auch beim Bier halt so, man orientiert sich dann doch so Richtung UK. Und ich glaube, da hat man so als deutscher Nachbar, denkt man immer so ein bisschen, auch gerade biertechnisch sind wir vielleicht irgendwie so der Nabel der Welt, aber ich glaube, das sehen die europäischen Nachbarn teilweise ganz anders.
Ja, das kann sein, could be. Er sagt aber auch, es ist ein fragiles System. Er hat schon das Gefühl, und dieses Gefühl teilen wir ja auch für den deutschen Markt, dass die Stimmung teilweise nicht überall total super ist, einfach deshalb, weil der Wettbewerb sich verschärft, weil es vor allen Dingen Probleme im Vertrieb gibt, ganz klar, bei vielen, weil man sehr rührig sein muss, weil wir immer noch eine schwierige Consumer-Geschichte haben, die Leute wollen. Das ist allerdings tatsächlich natürlich in Deutschland noch eine viel stärkere Geschichte oder eine viel schwierigere Geschichte als jetzt dort, weil Bier bei uns natürlich sehr günstig ist. Aber sein Vergleich mit der Swedish House Mafia, den fand ich schon sehr treffend.
Der ist sehr lustig, genau, weil er den Spirit beschreibt und natürlich auch vergleicht eben halt mit den 90ern in der Musikszene. Und ja Gott, vielleicht kommt nach Eindhoven auch irgendwann die Swedish Beer Mafia, man weiß es nicht.
Pom. Wir wollen es nicht hoffen.
Und dann ist es passiert, genau. Wir haben Biere verkostet. Das Euphorie von 100 Watt von der Stadsbrewerie Eindhoven.
Von Rob. Rob, der zuvor, ganz interessant, Toningenieur war.
Ja, sowohl live als auch im Studio viel unterwegs war mit Bands und sich dann auch Richtung Bier orientiert hat.
War vorher Heimbrauer, hatte dann keinen Bock mehr, hat dann immer mehr angefangen zu brauen. Dann wurde ihm bei einem Praktikum, das er gemacht hat, bescheinigt, dass er ein Wahnsinnstalent hat zum Brauen. Und da hat er sich gedacht, mache ich das mal. Rob ist ein total lustiger Typ, hat eine tierisch große Klappe. Sehr unterhaltsam, sich mit ihm, also wirklich sich mit ihm zu treffen, ist eine sehr unterhaltsame Geschichte. Und er macht tatsächlich sehr spannende Biere. Das 100 Watt Stadsbrewery, das gehört zusammen. 100 Watt Café ist deren Tasting-Lokal, wenn man so will. Da kann man auch sehr gut essen. Und das ist tatsächlich in einem alten Industriegebiet, wenige Meter von der Bottle Distillery, die wir schon zu Beginn dieses Podcasts erwähnt haben. Das ist so ein kleines, auch Start-up-Ding. Die Mieten sind da noch sehr gering tatsächlich, deshalb kann man da sowas hochziehen. Er sagt, der Laden brummt, das läuft total gut. Und auch als wir da waren, und das war jetzt der besagte
Montag.
Traurige Montag, an diesem traurigen Montag war es dann nicht mal sonderlich traurig.
Nee, da war nicht in dem Falle tatsächlich ganz gut was los. Ich glaube, wenn man aufhat, ist auch ganz gut was los.
Wir haben das später noch gesehen, als wir mit dem Gespräch mit Erwin durch. Ich muss es an dieser Stelle erzählen, weil es so schön war, weil er sagte, ja, und wo wollt ihr jetzt denn? Und wir waren ja ein wenig ratlos, weil er so viel zuhört. Und er sagte nur ganz trocken, Drinkers Pop.
Ein besonders schöner Name.
Der Drinkers Pop hatte er auch auf und da waren wirklich alle, die nicht wussten, wohin. Das war wirklich sehr schön. Kommen wir zu den Bieren.
Da haben wir von 100 Watt das Euphorie, ein IPA. Was haben wir denn da drin? Gerstenmalz, Pale Ale, Karakristall, Biskuit und Münchner und Roggenmalz und dann Hopfen Chinook, Eldorado, Vakatu und Centennial. Und ja, wie war der Eindruck? Stabiler, feinporiger Schaum. Von der Farbe her so ein bisschen wie Spezi. Sehr weiches Mundgefühl, bisschen harzig im Abgang. Und das Interessante war, vom Geruch her beim Öffnen direkt an der Flasche tatsächlich fruchtig tropisch, aber davon blieb dann im Glas eigentlich nichts mehr über, auch vom Geruch her. Und wir müssen natürlich zugeben, dass wir mit den Bieren ein bisschen rumgefahren sind danach. So Eindhoven war unsere erste Station in einer zweiwöchigen Reise. Und wir haben natürlich geguckt, dass die Biere nicht allzu warm werden im Auto. Aber das verfliegt natürlich auch ein bisschen das Hopfenaroma.
Und das zweite Bier.
Das zweite Bier ist von Van Mol. Das ist ein Koop mit der Harnt Bryggeriet in Norwegen, das Inspektor Nors. Und das ist ein Kveik Imperial IPA mit 8% Alkohol. Das ist von der Farbe ähnlich wie das andere, was wir eben hatten, das von 100 Watt, das Euphorie. Sehr stabiler Schaum, muss man sagen, von der Farbe ein trüber Bernstein. Geruch ist Orangenschalen haben wir da gerochen, ein bisschen Zitrusfrüchte. Im Mund sehr cremiges Mundgefühl, muss man sagen. Sehr sprittig vom Eindruck her und Aromen, ja, sowas wie Ananas kam irgendwie durch. Natürlich auch wirklich sehr stark die Orangenschalen, die man auch gerochen hat. Und ich glaube, das ist auch so ein bisschen typisch natürlich auch für die Kveikhefen, für diese norwegischen Kveikhefen, so eine besondere Fruchtigkeit in diesem Falle. Das finde ich aber sowieso ganz spannend. Damit wird ja gerade sehr viel experimentiert und da kommen wirklich tolle Biere bei raus.
Hast du schon was damit gemacht?
Nee, die müssen ja so wahnsinnig warm vergoren werden und so warm ist das bei uns nirgendwo.
Wie löst denn das?
Jemand erzählte mir von einer Heizung für ein Wasserbett, dass man sowas benutzen könnte. Da muss ich mich nochmal schlau machen, was man da tun kann.
Bisschen basteln,
genau. Das ist aber noch in den Sternen.
In den Sternen steht ja auch ein bisschen, wie der nächste Cider wird. Ne? Du bist ja auch so ein bisschen auf Cider abgefahren. Ich muss es deshalb erzählen, weil dieses Bild von dir, wie du doch sehr lange, wie viele Stunden hast du da mit den Äpfeln
zugebracht? Ich möchte nicht darüber reden.
Du hast Äpfel geholt und hast sehr viele Äpfel geschält, entsaftet und anschließend in dein Klarstein gepackt.
Ja, erwärmt und runtergekühlt und jetzt sind sie im Gäreimer und gären tatsächlich schon vor sich hin. Es waren frische Äpfel von Bekannten von meinen Eltern aus Lüneburg. Ja, schauen wir mal, was daraus so wird. Ein Champagnerapfel, vielleicht ist das ein gutes Omen.
Ja, aber das sind geschlossene Kreisläufe, so soll es ja eigentlich sein. Aber es ist schon viel Arbeit, muss man sagen.
Ja, wenn ich gewusst hätte, dass es so viele sehr kleine Äpfel sind, hätte ich das auch nicht gemacht.
Okay, kommen wir zum nächsten Punkt, zu den
Terminen.
Da haben wir wieder was Schönes für euch rausgesucht.
Was Schönes?
Ja, was ganz, ganz Schönes. Wir starten zeitnah und zwar 26.09. Omnipollo eröffnet in Hamburg. Ist ein kleines Heimspiel für uns.
Wahnsinn, ja genau. Ist quasi direkt um die Ecke, auch noch in einem Laden, wo ich in den 90ern auch, Ende der 90er, viel rumgehangen habe, muss ich gestehen. Ja, schauen wir mal, wie das wird.
Den Laden gibt es nicht mehr, dich doch. Hey, ho, hey. Mal sehen, ob wir dir auch so ein Refresh irgendwann geben können, wie Omnipollo es diesem Laden gegeben haben wird. Denn das hat echt lange gedauert. Die werden da investiert haben. Dummerweise haben sie vor wenigen Tagen eine kleine Wasserleitung angebohrt. Aber ich hörte, die Eröffnung wird trotzdem stattfinden.
Super.
26.09. Omnipollo.
Ecke Max-Brauer-Allee, Schulterblatt.
Vielen Dank. Ich habe gerade, die Menschen spüren das, wo dieser Laden ist, aber es ist gut, dass du da. Ein weiterer Termin auch am 26. Die für alle, die sagen, ich möchte eigentlich was anderes machen, da wird es mir zu voll. Ich hätte es gerne lieber kuscheliger und möchte dabei meine Sprachkenntnisse auffrischen. Im Malto, das wir beide ja sehr mögen.
Absolut.
Ist es so, dass dort jetzt eine Bierlingual Spanisch-Deutsch stattfindet? Das heißt, ihr geht dahin, ihr könnt ein bisschen auf Spanisch schnacken, insofern ihr dieser Sprache mächtig seid oder ihr möchtet ihrer mächtig werden. Ihr könntet es wagen tun, ihr könnt gutes Bier trinken und dabei ein bisschen Spanisch lernen.
Super.
Ist ja eigentlich ein ganz charmanter Termin, oder?
Ja.
Deshalb dachte ich mir, nehmen wir den auf. Auch am 26.09. in der, jetzt kommst du wieder.
Max-Brauer-Allee.
Ja.
Ich weiß die Nummer vom Malto nicht, aber das findet man ja raus.
Das ist gegenüber vom Gericht.
Genau.
Gerichtsstraße. Ecke Max-Brauer-Gerichtsstraße. 4. bis 5. Oktober. Craft Beer Fest Lübeck. Findet statt in der Kulturwerft Gollern. Über 100 verschiedene Biere zum Probieren, 15 Top-Brauereien aus der Region, dazu passende Speisen, frisch gekocht. Das alles wird es beim Craft Beer Fest Lübeck geben, heißt es im Veranstaltungstext.
Wollten wir auch schon immer mal hin, haben wir noch nie geschafft.
Nee, aber wir könnten es ja erneut mal versuchen.
Ja.
Dann, 19. Oktober. Ein Termin, der finde ich, das klingt total charmant. Wildwuchs rockt. Und Wildwuchs heißt, es verwöhnt euch mit söten Tönen und krassen Bässen. Konzertabend in unserer Brauerei und ihr rockt die Hütte. Also alle Partys, die ich bisher dort gefeiert habe, waren wirklich gut und es wurde tatsächlich in der Regel immer gerockt. Ich glaube, das letzte Mal tanzten wir mit Freunden zu irgendwelchen Euro-Pop-Songs. So,
das, aus den 90ern.
Ja, das war übelst, aber sehr, sehr lustig. Ich möchte noch darauf hinweisen, welche Bands da kommen. Vor allen Dingen auf eine Band, die um 19 Uhr spielt, weil ich diesen Titel einfach zum Verlieben schön finde. Denn diese Band heißt Tiere, die Krankheiten haben.
Ah.
Ganz gut, oder?
Was das wohl für ein Musikstil ist.
Der Eintritt kostet schlappe 5 Euro. Ich denke, das hat man vielleicht über Bier gibt's vom Fiete. Das wird bestimmt eine runde Nummer. Viel mehr Termine haben wir nicht, denn wir haben es beim letzten Mal schon angedeutet. Wir sind so wahnsinnig fleißig in letzter Zeit. Wir sind noch voll in diesem Bam-Bam-Bam-Modus drin. Ne?
Genau, wir haben diverseste Podcasts aufgenommen schon und hauen die so nach und nach raus.
Wir hauen das so raus. Wir hauen das raus. Wir haben dazu auch einen Blog, der nennt sich hopcast.de und dort werdet ihr das, was wir hier so auditiv von uns geben, auch visuell sehen können und nachlesen können und auch ein paar Fotos sehen können, unter anderem auch von Erwin van Mol und einem sehr schönen Hawaii-Hemd. Und van Mol ist ja eh eine sehr bunte Marke, die haben immer diese lustigen Tierchen irgendwie auch auf dem Etikett.
Ja, ja, die haben echt ein ganz, ganz, ganz lustiges Design.
Genau, wenn ihr euch dafür interessiert, schaut auf den Blog und da haben wir natürlich auch die Termine nochmal aufgeführt und haben auch weitere Termine überhaupt in so einer Jahresliste für euch zusammengesammelt. Da gibt es immer wieder was sehr Schönes zu entdecken.
Genau, bei van Mol fällt mir gerade nochmal ein, die haben sogar zu jedem Bier eine Playlist bei Spotify.
Das ist süß, oder?
Wo man draufklicken kann. Also wirklich passt besonders gut zu und dann kommt eine Spotify-Playlist. Das ist auch was ganz Besonderes. Also sehr musikalisch, der ganze Laden.
Musik im Bier ist ja eh eine tolle Mischung.
Wie man ja in dem Podcast wieder gemerkt hat und auch bei dem Rob, den wir in Eindhoven trafen, es ist, ja, es ergibt sich einfach so.
Was würdest du denn zum Inspektor North hören?
Das haust du jetzt einfach so raus, ne?
Ja.
Hast du mich hier voll auf den falschen Fuß erwischen, wa? Ja. Ja, irgendeine norwegische Band im Zweifel. Irgendwie ist es ja eben eine Koop mit einer norwegischen Brauerei und vielleicht würde ich mal The September When wieder rausholen. Eine norwegische Band aus den 90ern, die ich lange nicht mehr gehört habe. Oder Aha, könnte ich mir total gut vorstellen. Ich würde irgendwie es versuchen, so ein bisschen norwegisch aufzuziehen.
Also wenn ich Aha höre, habe ich sofort dieses Hunting High and Low im Ohr.
Dazu würde ich, glaube ich, eher einen Stout trinken, aber das ist, das weiß ich nicht.
Vielleicht sollten wir deine Rubrik, die du auch mal gepflegt hast, da hast du immer Musik und Bier vorgestellt am Freitag. Vielleicht sollten wir das mal wiederbeleben lassen.
Ja, das lief total gut. Das haben jedes Mal ungefähr 3 Leute durchgelesen.
Ja, aber wir können ja eine kleine Umfrage machen. Möchtet ihr das jeden Freitag haben? Dann bitte kurze Nachricht. Wir brauchen wieder Musik und Bier, und weil nicht, eigentlich nicht, ist es ein tolles
nicht die drei
Thema.
Leute, nicht die 3 Leute, die es damals auch gelesen haben, die zählen nicht.
Ich denke, es waren mehr als 3, nur du weißt, Interaktionsrate, ein ganz, ganz schwieriges Thema im Social-Media-Bereich. Aber ich habe es heute schon mehrfach gesagt, auch das soll auch nicht unser Thema sein. Wir haben jetzt eigentlich auch fast alle Themen abgearbeitet. Also so richtig haben wir jetzt auch gar keins
mehr. Für heute, genau, sage ich einfach mal Tschüss und bis bald.
Ja, ist der Worte leer. Ahoi.